Welcome to Ask Better Questions on Purpose, a podcast where real conversations inspire deeper connection and curiosity with your hosts, AJ Bieber and Dr. Stephen Bagley. Let's dive in.
We're back with another interview, and it's my pleasure and delight to introduce Jen Gaskin. Jen and I have known each other for, two decades, something like that?
Yes.
At least?
At least, yeah.
We met because we were on purpose. Both of us served on the Arms of Love board, where we were addressing issues for orphans and at-risk kids in the Philippines and in Nicaragua. And we were on that board for quite a while together and got to know each other. And one of the things that has really been impressive to me is that while we were on the board at Arms of Love, Jen figured out that she was there on purpose, but her purpose wasn't to vote on issues and give direction as a governing body of this nonprofit international ministry. And when she suggested that she not be a voting member, the rest of us voted that she would be a chaplain to our board, because it was her prayer life that inspired and directed our activities. So today, I want to ask Jen to talk about all the ideas she has and how she lives out her prayer training, and then to share with us how all that developed in her life. Jen, tell us about the problem people have with prayer.
The big issue with prayer is that it is ignored or kind of given a token nod to in many situations. Like, we're opening our discussion or we're starting our meal in prayer, but we're not really entering into the work of prayer and using it to its full capacity to enable our activities and what we want to see forwarded. How's that?
That sounds like what I've experienced. I believe that prayer is probably the thing that brings heaven to earth more often, and we need to focus more on it. We don't see our way to it, to interact with it like you do.
Well, when I think about holistic health and how we treat our bodies, these aspects of how our breathing and walking and tending our nervous system affect our overall health. And I think those things have a spiritual correlation to our spiritual health. Prayer is a lot like the nervous system in the body, because as an individual people cell, I'm reporting back to the Father, what is my experience right now, which is what your nerves are telling the mind. So your nerves are reporting, it's really hot in this room, or I'm cramped, or I'm feeling agitated. And then the brain responds when there's these messages, both individually and corporately, from a bunch of different nerve sites with instructions about how to respond to that. And that's a lot like what happens in prayer when we report to the Father, this is what I see, this is how I'm doing. And then the Father sends back some instructions about how the body can move. That is very closely related to prayer. Not exactly the same, but they sit together very closely and function, because I see prayer as releasing, giving information to God, and we're also putting ourselves into a posture of receiving from Him. What did God give us to do? And how are we bringing that to pass? How are we investing and multiplying the talents that God gave to us? How are we bearing fruit in the realm in which He has prepared good works in advance for us to do? Long answer to your short question.
That's beautiful. It sounds to me like you are bringing practicality of our daily lives to prayer, and how they're both influenced. That holistic aspect of everything is interconnected. Jen, can you share for our listeners something that you've been through maybe recently, or maybe something that comes to your mind of how prayer was used? I just would like an example of that so we can relate.
So we moved to this small town during the pandemic, and we started praying over it and doing these prayer walks. And one thing that we noticed when we got here was that there was an old hotel in the middle of the downtown that was all boarded up. When you're walking around the town, it almost feels like the heart of the town in this hotel is all shut down. And over time, the places across the street also both became vacant, and the place next door to it also became vacant. And it almost seemed like disease was spreading from that place. And the town has kind of low functionality in administrative and business qualities. And so that's one of the things that we have prayed for consistently, and prayed specifically for that hotel. Even before we moved here, my husband was tracking this hotel and what was happening with it. And for a long time, they were trying to either sell it or get one or another owner to renovate it or whatever. It can't be torn down because it's a historical site. But the cost of renovating it grew and grew and grew over the last 15 years while we've been tracking this project, to the point where it was millions of dollars to do the earthquake retrofitting, and just so far out of line with what seemed possible for this situation. We came and we started praying regularly on our walks for it, and praying overall for the business functionality of the town, and for a kind of oppression that feels like it's on the town in terms of its economic thriving, like there's almost a lid on it. And we prayed for that lid to be rolled back, for economic thriving here, for business sense and acumen in this area, and for specifically for this hotel. We took time to walk around it a few times, praying for it. And actually, at one point, we went to a conference, which was unrelated. But we ran into another couple there, and God had given them a dream about us in which we were in a hotel downtown in the new town that we lived in, and it was open and there were lots of people milling around in it and being used to give dance lessons and other things. And so that felt like a big confirmation to us that we should be praying into this. And then we started at these prayer meetings that we've started, at some of them we've prayed for this hotel, and somebody in the prayer meeting knew the gentleman who had most recently purchased it and was trying to forward things. So we started praying for him by name and for him to be able to get permits and to receive funding and find resources to enable this project to go forward, because it's been evident over the last several years that it is stalled out partly on a spiritual level. There's something going on which is kind of got a lid on this project. And I had the sense the whole time that if it could be revitalized, it would have a very catalytic effect on the whole town. Anyway, he found out that we were praying, and he was kind of like, well, tell them to speak up and go down to the county officer or the city hall and ask for these things. But he didn't have any appreciation for the prayer, really. Anyhow, recently there was a breakthrough in this whole thing where caught the attention of a national magazine called Preservation Magazine that covers the revitalization of historic sites. And it's a place that attracts investors and national interest in a project like this. So we have yet to see where that will end up. But the fact that it was highlighted in an article in this magazine, we see that as a door beginning to open in response to these prayers. And even the gentleman who purchased it, he's gotten it to a certain stage where it's no longer dangerous, like the walls are not going to fall down. So there has been shoring up of the walls. And so we're seeing all these, you know, moments of progress as markers of something in a process that God is doing, that he is utilizing our prayers to release those events to come about.
Absolutely. And that's amazing that you even pointed out that he's like, no, just go down to the city council, go to the meetings and be sure to speak, because he's thinking about all the architecture and that's where his gifts and talents lie. But yet all of you have been brought together for a much bigger purpose. And now that really helps be able to relate to where prayer is filling in that gap. That was such a beautiful story. Thank you so much for sharing.
Yeah. That. And hopefully, I mean, it's just the beginnings, because we're praying it in and we're hoping to see it eventually attract investors, for it to reopen, for it to be repaired, and for it to affect the economy of the whole town, to provide employment opportunities.
The way I hear it is, somebody may be listening right now who says, I didn't even know I had a gift of prayer, and this is something that I can find my purpose in showing up in these bigger purposes by just paying attention, like you said, how it's all interconnected, like that holistic body analogy that you gave.
Yeah, I'd like to recommend a book, actually, because there might be some people out there who are wondering about what you just said. Like, how would you know if you have a gift of prayer, which it's not limited. It's not like some people can pray and other people can't pray. Everybody can pray. But I do think that there are some people who are more in the line of burden bearing, and a large part of understanding the ability to bear burdens in a way which doesn't just zap you of all energy and kind of drain you is to understand your role in prayer and understand your connection to prayer. So a good book about that is The Mystery of Spiritual Sensitivity, Your Guide to Responding to Burdens You Feel from God's Heart, by Carol Brown. It's the second in a series of books. The first one, I think, might just be called Highly Spiritually Sensitive or something.
I was going to, of course, take it in the wrong direction or a different direction, because, AJ, you don't know that Jen is a yoga teacher. And
okay, no, I don't know that.
A lot of how she talks about spiritual things, it's her awareness of how the body works from her study of the physiology. She knows more about how the body works than most of the doctors I've had advise me. And here's my little story about that. We were on a telephone call, and she told me to show up at her place so she could work on me, because she could tell by listening to me that I wasn't doing as well as I needed to. So that sensitivity, if she could hear that in my voice and in my breathing, now take that in conversation with God and his awareness of each of our physiology, how much deeper he understands us. See, she became an expression of care to me based on the gifts that God had given her and the gifts that are missing or not a part of my constitution. And that expanded the awareness of what can happen, because I wasn't just looking at what I could do for me. In fact, Jen has held my head in her hands for 30 minutes.
Yeah, so I do craniotherapy, which is why I was working on his head.
And I have a cranial therapy need.
This is on podcast, so we can't really get the gist of this unless we're looking at each other's photos right now, right?
Yeah. Well, like I talked about at the beginning, we've known each other because we were on purpose about orphans and at-risk kids in third world countries. Even back then, I remember that there were times where when Jen would focus on the plight of the kids we were trying to help, it felt like a burden. And the only place to relieve the burden seemed to be take it to God, pray about it. What I saw Jen do was focus on meeting with the director of Arms of Love regularly and leading Jess into a deeper prayer life, which has led the whole organization into a much better, 25 years now of that organization caring for kids. And I think Jenna, it feels to me like the whole thing is better off than when we started.
Definitely see how God has brought about much more focus on developing the spiritual life of the kids and the staff. And it didn't happen through a program. It really happened as an outflow of the life of the director. Because as Jess has grown in her prayer life, she has impacted the directors in each country, and they have impacted the staff and the kids. And so that's been really beautiful to see.
You've been training people to pray for others for a long time, actually. Tell us about what you train them about prayer. What experiences do you bring them to? Now, and I've watched, now you're actually doing classes.
Yeah. I think some of us have the idea that prayer has to do with sort of going down a laundry list of the things that we want to see happen. Okay, God, here's my ideas of what should be happening in my life, and I'd like you to accomplish them, sort of like a cosmic vending machine kind of interaction. I'm going to ask, and you're going to give me this thing. And because of that, prayer seems, well, it doesn't seem relational. It can even seem unappealing to some people, like they shouldn't ask for what they want because it almost seems like selfishness. Hmm. So we have this kind of very shallow picture or incomplete picture of prayer that isn't too appealing. It's not compelling to people. So why did Jesus spend so much time in prayer reporting to the Father what he was doing? And the answer is, it is a very tight relational act that prayer is, that this, the way that the nerves in your body are always reporting, constantly reporting back to the brain what is happening around them, that is part of what keeps the body healthy and tightly woven, moving together. The limbs receiving information from the mind about what to do next, and the mind receiving information from the nerves about what is happening. It's this very tightly wound, close relationship. And Jesus is investing in that relational act. So constantly telling the Father, telling him at great length, this is what I understand that I'm supposed to be doing, my essential task. This is how it's going. This is how it's going for everybody else. And how often do we do that in prayer? Do we spend time telling God, this is what I think you're asking me to do, and this is how I think it's going, and sharing that together with him and having those relational moments? We could hear Jesus say, abide in me, but might not know what that means. But this reporting and this repetition and this close sharing is part of that abiding that Jesus demonstrated to.
Yeah. Jen, you are so speaking to my heart right now. As a lifetime journaler, I have seen that as my practical application of spirituality, because as I have that ability to, as we all have that ability to observe what's happening in our life, then because we have that observation, we can see how it can play out, and it gives us that opportunity to continue that, to build that. And it seems you've been given this incredible, incredible gift to see how Jesus prayed as our example, and then dissect that in a way that you can help others bring that to their own prayer life, is what I'm gathering. Is that correct?
Well, I mean, you never know how it goes out to other people or transforms their prayer life or not. But I definitely have a heart to share that information with people. I think also another point is that the things that Jesus tends to pray about, the things that Jesus asks for are less concrete than the types of prayers that we tend to pray. And they're not wrong to pray. He did tell us, you know, pray, give us this day our daily bread. So when we come before the Father and we say, so-and-so is ill and I'm facing this big payment or whatever. It's not wrong to pray about those things. But when we look at the prayer life of Jesus, he's praying on a very meta level. He's praying like from a mile high level, looking down at these little details and asking for kind of larger spiritual movements in the life of the disciples. Actually, the first thing that he prays for in John 17 is he prays to be glorified. He says, glorify your son, that your son also may glorify you. And that's the very first thing that he asks for, which is kind of takes us aback as believers who may have been trained to be meek and humble. And here Jesus comes into the Father's presence and says, glorify me. But when you look carefully at word glorify, it can mean to cause the dignity and worth of a person to become manifest, to become acknowledged. And so the word itself has that thrust of revealing, making manifest who somebody is. And so Jesus is coming before the Father and saying, reveal who I am in you. And because he was perfect, just revealing who he was is enough to bring about many good things. And we may not feel that about ourselves, but the reality is that if we are in our essential task and God does reveal who we were made to be in him, it will have the same effect of drawing worship to the Father, because it is glorifying to him when a people cell, a cell in the body of Christ, does what it's supposed to do. That healthifies the whole body and it brings glory to God. But the other things that he asked for were for God to protect his followers, and not by being taken out of the world, but by God keeping hold of them. I want to see if I have the exact wording here. I pray for them, keep through your name, those whom you have given me, that they may be one as we are. So he's saying, I do not pray that you should take them out of the world, but that you should keep them from the evil one. And so often we're praying specifically about a situation and asking for it to end, or for us to be taken out of it, for the time that we're suffering to be attenuated. And it's interesting how he prays very differently. He doesn't say, take them out of the world, but he says, but while they're in there, protect them from it. So we need to kind of understand, well, our situation may not be fixed right away. It might be an ongoing situation that we're left in for a longer time than we would care to be left there. But in it, can we have a sense of God's protection? So I think that's really interesting that he prays for that. Go ahead. Were you going to say something?
Yeah, that's something that people who have lost a loved one become very aware of. You know, the grief is so strong, they want it to be removed. But yes, they removing it, they would lose something even stronger, even more important, God's comfort in the middle of the grief. And, you know, when it's just a few months old, you're having a hard time praying because there's this sense that the grief will never end. But sharing that grief over time, the benefit of continually going to God is that his comfort outlives the grief, and that comes through prayer. Well, hey, Jay, now you know why I like Jen. Jen, you had a breakthrough. You were telling me about writing letters.
Yeah.
Tell us about that a little bit.
Well, for a long time, I've been trying to write about the ministry of reconciliation. So if you think about unity, if you define unity as everybody coming to one side of a boulder and pushing together to free up our problems, then you're going to feel hopeless. You're going to just be overwhelmed with the futility of trying to create reconciliation on the earth, because it's clear that people are very wedded to the side of the issue that they're on. whatever the issue is. And because we can see that people are not budging from their side, and we think about unity as everybody coming to the same side, what does it mean then to be a minister of reconciliation? Well, the best we could do, the best we could hope for, is to pretend that there is no division. So if we gather with our relatives to have Thanksgiving dinner and we're sitting next to somebody that we know is on the opposite side of the political spectrum than we are, we might feel that being a minister of reconciliation in that context means not talking about politics, because being quiet and hiding our opinion is the best that we can do. That forwards reconciliation to the degree that it's possible to forward it. And that anemic vision of being a minister of reconciliation is pretty rife in the church today, right? Where it feels like instead of peacemaking, we are peacekeeping, and not in a way that's compelling to the rest of the world. Like if the church is going to stand before the entire world and say, reconciliation belongs to us, and here's our best advice. Our best advice is to hide whatever your opinion is when you're talking to someone who has a different opinion than you. That's not a compelling message to share with the world. They're doing better than we are then, if that's all that we have to say. So I've been writing about this problem of stewardship for a long time, maybe 15 years. And I was trying to get across some of these ideas about how can we think differently about unity so that we can grow forward, so that our thought life about unity can grow forward, so that we can make progress as a body in addressing division in the world.
That's beautiful. And it seems like it goes right back to how you opened up this conversation, which is there's a gap in the body that can be filled through prayer.
And not only through prayer, yes, I agree with you, but also through having a different conception of unity. So instead of thinking about unity in that everybody going the same direction and pushing the boulder kind of way, I call that univectoral. But if we can understand in a human body, health is actually created of multivectoral forces. So if you want to use your arm, let's say you have a bicep and a tricep, and one of them pulls and one of them pushes. Well, it actually is pulling. It's just pulling in the opposite direction. But if you want to take a sip from a teacup, you'll pick up your teacup and you'll bring it to your mouth. That's basically a pulling action. It's a predominantly biceps action. However, if you had no tricep pulling in the opposite direction, your cup couldn't slow down. It would just keep coming and it would smash you in the face. So the ability to make an elegant, coordinated movement, even if it's predominated by one side, is all thanks to the other side giving accuracy and precision by slowing that movement down. And the same is true in the opposite direction. If you want to throw a shot put 30 meters away from your body, that's primarily a tricep action. But if your bicep didn't slow you down, your whole body would be thrown to the ground with that action. So there's temporizing. There's what we call in the body synchronous antagonism, that both muscles are pulling their own direction. They never turn around. They never come to the same side of the boulder. If you're standing inside the bicep and you're looking at the triceps muscle, it looks like it's going completely opposite to you. They're totally opposing. However, even though they're opposing in direction, in timing, they are coordinating so that one of them is resistance just right, so that as the other one pulls, the movement is perfectly elegant and skillful. And that's what we really need to learn about in the church, is not how can we change each other, or as we approach any division in the world, is not how can we change one side to think about the issue like the other side is thinking about it, but allow them to each have their own pull, but to ask, what is the way, what is the timing that we can coordinate between the two of your poles so that you are now creating a shared action that is beneficial to the whole beneficial to the whole body, beneficial to the whole world. And we don't know very much about that because we haven't been giving it much thought. We've been giving a lot of thought to how could we change somebody else's mind? How could we get them to see the light, to see things the way that I'm seeing them? But if we gave a lot of thought, it would open up a whole different arena of learning on the earth.
Dr. B, do you want to ask how people can get a hold of Jen? We forgot that
people
part.
People get a hold of Jen because AJ can't ask that question. It's against the rules.
I have a website, which is cogrity.com. And then I also have a website, which is about the yoga and stuff, which is jengaskin.com.
And through the website, can they get a hold of you?
Oh, on prayer?
Yes.
I have been teaching some classes on prayer, and I think I even have a recording that people could listen to, cogrityvlog@gmail.com, which is cog@gmail.com. V as in Victor vlog.
Thank you.
So we've had a good conversation and we need to wind things up. So we're going to do our tradition.
Dr. B, I have one question before we go there. I didn't hear Jen's backstory. I mean, you have an incredible sense, Jen. I mean, it is a gift that you have been given. It would be lovely to hear your story of how this became your purpose.
Hang tight. We'll jump back into the conversation in just a moment. Do you know someone living on purpose? We'd love to hear their story. Nominate them at abqonpurpose.com. And while you're there, check out our growing library of inspiring interviews. All right, back to the story.
Well, at the beginning of my adult life, actually right after I had gotten married and had my first child, our church lost its pastor to adultery. And we were able to pull out of that situation. Another gentleman stepped into that role and was able to carry the church through a time of a lot of misery and grieving about what had happened, but the church survived. And 20 years later, when my husband and I were on the elder board and involved in all kinds of ministry, leading the home group ministry and in charge of part of the kids ministry and everything, at that time, the gentleman who had stepped in to help bring our church out of that earlier heartache himself committed adultery. And it was so devastating to us. It was so heartbreaking to us. And as an elder board, we were charged with finding a new pastor. And during the search, we said to each other, we do not want this to happen again. It's so painful. It is so devastating to deal with the aftermath of that in a small church community. And so we tried to encourage the people in the congregation that rather than seeking another charismatic celebrity personality kind of leader, we wanted to encourage everyone to own their own spiritual growth and be more involved with the direction of the church. And that instead of calling a big shot senior pastor, we were going to try to create a more lateral leadership structure in the church. Well, we ended up calling a pastor, and he, even though we had said all this to him up front, he heard everything that we were saying through the lens of all the senior pastors that he had watched in the past and still expecting to have that kind of latitude. So he became very upset with us and left after 6 months. And when he left, he had kind of sown his discontent among a group of people who just erupted. And it became a situation of very serious division where the elder board and this other group were just, it seemed like an intractable chasm had opened up between us. And the area pastor came in to the situation and sided with the pastor who left, basically making it yes, it was our fault. And so we had worked as volunteers for 2 years to call this man and to try to help him to understand that we were what we were looking for and how we were trying to grow each person's understanding of relating directly to God more than that we were trying to create this, you know, senior pastor kind of situation. And we were exhausted from having all these tasks to do. And then we were also blamed for the failure of the experiment. And so when we ended up leaving that church, and when we went, we found another church. And when we went to the new church, the pastor said to us, you know, you're going to want to be really, you're at risk for becoming very embittered towards the church, but please don't throw the church out in this time. And I really took those words to heart, and I began to search the scriptures about the church and her destiny and the metaphors of scripture in the body and the bride and the city that comes down from heaven. And in that search, I really became so much more aware of God's patient, tender fashioning of the church throughout history. And really, it caused me to fall in love with Jesus so much more than ever before, because I could see how he had this purpose in mind to bring about this wedding day with a bride who was free from blemish, spot, or wrinkle, and with whom he could partner, and who, it says in Ephesians, on whom he could pour out all the riches of his loving kindness for all the ages to come, and bring to unity all things. And so there's this amazing arc in the whole of Scripture from the time of Adam and Eve as like the first people cells. It's like a generative mitosis of people cells, all the way to the point where the bride stands before Christ at the wedding in Revelations. And the entire time, God is working to abolish division and unify all things. And it was that study at that time that really made me aware of how far we are from adequately bringing that message of reconciliation to the world.
So with that, let's close with asking better questions.
Wow. Yes.
AJ, can you start, and then Jen, and then I'll close.
Okay. I've just been so inspired by our conversation today, Jen. And from listening to your story, I can see the gap that you filled. And so the question I would ask is, what gap is in my life that I can fill at this time that can also be connected to others and a greater purpose?
Oh, beautiful question.
Jen?
I would say, a great question is for each of us to ask, how was I built? How can I start to understand my essential task and pursue it? Because Scripture says it's the glory of God to conceal a matter and the glory of kings to search it out. So how can I begin to search out my role in the proliferation of God's will to be released here?
And I would ask the question, why have I spent most of my life telling God what I want rather than asking him who he wants me to be? And prayer is the way to get that figured out. So thank you, Jen. Thank you, AJ. Thank you.
Thank you for tuning in to Ask Better Questions on Purpose. Join our growing community at abqonpurpose.com and share your favorite moments with a friend. Remember, get on purpose, stay on purpose, be on purpose. See you next time.